Going to continue looking at God's providence in American history. If you remember, last time we talked about this, last month, we studied George Washington in his very early days. He was in his 20s, early 20s. The battle of Monongahela, which was a total disaster, catastrophe for the British. It wasn't for Colonel George Washington. He's the only officer that lived through that. And the soldiers marveled, if you remember, at his bravery, and his reputation spread throughout the colonies. And I'm repeating some of the things we talked about last time, but soon most people in the colonies, the 13 colonies, thought of him as a national hero. Washington said, however, "I was saved by the miraculous care of a providence that protected me beyond human expectation." Now, several months after the battle, his life was threatened again, but this time by a disease. He contracted tuberculosis. And as Washington grew worse, the army doctor who was working on him began to lose hope. He was sinking quickly. He wrote in his diary that he had told Washington, and this is interesting, that even at that point in his life, 22 years old, other people would see who this man was. And he said, "The fate of your friends and country are in many ways dependent upon your recovery." But the doctor really thought it was too late. But just as Washington appeared to die of violent, lung pains as he was dying, he suddenly got well. God had healed him. And it's also an interesting blessing concerning that in contracting tuberculosis, that it immunized him from the worst killer of the American Revolution, and that was tuberculosis. It's just another interesting twist of how God continued to work in George Washington's life. But after the French and Indian War, Washington had no interest in any more military glory or anything to do with the military, so it seemed that Virginia was safe for the time being, and he decided to retire and go home and live a quiet life with his wife. He was a newlywed. Washington believed that his marriage to Martha Custis was the event of his life. And to Washington, his military career was over, but now he would begin a happy life as a farmer in his beloved Mount Vernon home. Now, I want to just go back and just give a little bit of history as we go. We're talking about Washington and some of the miracles, but I think it's really good to review exactly what America or the future of America was facing. Tensions between England and the colonies have been ongoing for years. In fact, I would suppose that tension between England and the colonies has started back in the 1600s when the dissenters came here, the Pilgrims and such. And to be honest, the tensions were mostly religious in nature. Britain and the Anglican Church tried to force its religion on the people. The Puritan and the Baptist mostly pushed back, but Britain continued to oppress in all matters and to simplify a very complicated time. They forced taxes, they forced their soldiers in the homes of the people, on and on. And the colonists became more and more frustrated with this relationship. The Britain decided that this was a rebellious people and they needed to be punished. So they actually sent troops to quell the rebellion. And the people, though, had started to think of Britain as really and the monarchs that ruled Britain over time, especially the one that would solidify himself, George III, as a tyrant. And frankly, they were. And so there's this great tension, and it took years to build up. But Britain sent troops to quell the rebellion, and quickly things went downhill. After more than 100 years, the individual colonies had been, for the most part, self-governing, and troops were raised, militias were raised, and things came to a boiling point. On March 23rd, 1775, now you want to know that date, 1775, we all know July 4, 1776. That's a little more than a year later. So about a year and 3 months before that, Patrick Henry stood up in the House of Burgesses in Virginia, and he said this. He said, "There is no room for hope. If we wish to be free, we must fight. An appeal to the arms and to the God of hosts is all that is left to us. 3 million people armed with the holy cause of liberty and in such a country are invincible by any force which our enemy can send against us. We shall not fight alone. God presides over the destinies of nations and will raise up friends for us. The battle is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. And essentially, the American War for Independence had begun. And that was March of 1775. The individual colonies would call a Continental Congress soon thereafter in May, and then they would call a second one in June. And war was already well underway in Massachusetts. There had been skirmishes. There had been people killed. The Congress had to make itself into a governing body and with executive war parties. And so they did. And they voted to meet the British force and meet with force. And what was needed, however, was a leader. And someone who could transform the part-time militia of preachers and farmers and merchants into a disciplined army. And John Adams, he proposed George Washington, which seemed to be the very obvious choice. No one had forgotten what Washington had done 20 years earlier in the battle that we studied last time. But by this time, Washington was a very content and at this time had become a pretty wealthy farmer. And really wanted nothing to do with leading the army. In fact, he was at the Congress. He was at the Continental Congress, but he slipped out, hoping that his name would be overlooked. Very humble man, and wanting nothing to do with what was about to happen. Just not wanting to help out, but not wanting to lead anything. When he heard that he might be made commander in chief of the army, he urged his friends in Congress to block the move. It wasn't to work out, and he was unanimously selected to lead America into war. He would accept the command, and he did, but only on the condition that Congress would appoint and fund chaplains for his troops, which Congress then promptly did. He then accepted what he called the momentous duty, but he warned his fellow countrymen. He said, with utmost sincerity, I do not think of myself equal to the command I am honored with. And he then refused any financial compensation, and he left the meeting to go home and prepare. When Washington took command of the troops in July, a month later, he immediately sent out an order that forbid profane swearing, cursing, and drunkenness, and then he stated that all his officers and all soldiers not engaged in actual duty, that they have a punctual attendance at divine services, and for this reason, to implore the blessing of heaven upon the means used for our safety and defense. Washington's faith, and this is something that's lost on most historians, almost all secular historians, but Washington's faith and devout Christianity would sustain this nation through the long 7 years that were ahead. Little did he know even the terrible hardships and also the wonderful miracles that awaited him. He wrote in a private prayer book. We can see exactly what he thought and how he thought. He wrote some things down that he did not intend for anybody else to see. But in these prayers that he wrote down in his own personal hand, we kind of see the man who he was in his most private moments. He said this. He was praying. He had morning prayers and evening prayers, and he would write them down. The book is about 50 pages long. It's a very interesting book to read. His actual words. He said, direct my thoughts. This is one of his prayers. Direct my thoughts, words, and work. Wash away my sins in the immaculate blood of the Lamb. Daily frame me more and more in the likeness of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Please look down from heaven in pity and compassion upon me, thy servant, who humbly prostrates myself before thee. To Washington, again, a lot of secular historians will say otherwise, but God was a very personal God who died on the cross for his sin. And he says this over and over, that God cared about people, he watched over the faithful, and he played an active role in the world, world events. This is the point, again, that many historians miss, and that's the point I want to make today as we study this man, and we'll look at him one more time. But America's greatest hero and first president was a devout, Bible-believing Christian that trusted God to guide him and to guide this country. During the war, he wrote this. He said, "Thou gavest thy son to die for me, and thou hast given me assurance of salvation. Lord, I have heard thy holy word. Let me live by those words. Direct me to the true object, Jesus Christ. Bless, O Lord, the people of this land." And I think it's just wonderful to see who this man was. Truly America's greatest hero, I will say that, including all the 250 years that's gone since then. And, you know, I think sometimes we grew up hearing, you know, George Washington, we hear that name, and yeah, well, you know, first president, first the founder of the country. And yet it'd be good as Christians to realize exactly who he was. And probably without George Washington, I'll say this, we would have America be an entirely different place. Not just because of the war, but what will happen afterwards when he is commander, when he is president. And, you know, the people around him understood this. Even, you know, it's rare that someone is recognized, I think, in their lifetime as a truly, you know, great person. But people did. In fact, if you read history, many people in the country wanted to make him king. That was, they wanted to crown him king of America after the war. And it was his character and his humility that said, no, there will be no king. I will not be king. And that's how great people thought he was. And I just want to leave that with you. And there's a long war to fight now, and we're going to study that. There are many miracles more to come. But I want to thank the Lord this morning for Washington and what he means to us. And, you know, I bring books to you. I want to talk about this book. This is one of the best books written, in my opinion, on it says the Christian roots of American liberty. This book is Faith and Freedom. I would recommend this to anyone who wants to look deeper into this. And it's a very, I wouldn't say an easy read, but a very interesting read. And I go to this book often, and have read it several times. And I would recommend this. It's written about 30 years ago, and by Benjamin Hart. And I would recommend that book. Anybody who wants to look deeper into the things that we're talking about, and the miracles, and the character of this nation in its early days, I think it's good to do that. And I think it's good to tell our children and our grandchildren these stories. One of the things you're seeing in our country, and not to belabor this, but is a total misunderstanding and a total forgetting of our history, and worse, trying to erase our history. And so, as Christians, we need to do all we can to stop that.